We're going to be talking today with our guest, Paul Napper. And his book is called The Power of Agency, The Seven Principles to Conquer Obstacles, Make Effective Decisions, and Create a Life on Your Own Terms. We're also going to be talking about the problem with anxiety in society. And you know that I've got a lot to say about that. So we're going to see how Paul and I agree or don't agree on anxiety. Now, Paul is a doctor of psychology, and he leads a management psychology practice. His client list includes Fortune 500 companies, nonprofits, universities, and startups. And he has held an advanced fellowship during a three-year academic appointment at Harvard Medical School. And he's the co-author of this book, The Power of Agency. Paul, it's nice to have you on the program today.
Well, thanks very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay. So I'm gonna start off on something that we might call negative, but I'm going to let you explain it. Your book is entitled The Power of Agency. Now, I've had 21 years of formal education, and I don't understand what you meant by the title. So I'm going to let you explain to me why you chose this title and what it means.
Great, great, great place to start. Well, first of all, agency is what we like to say to people. You know, human agency is one of the most important things that you've never heard of, because it is a term, a concept that has mostly been studied within the worlds of academia, whether in philosophy, psychology, sociology. You know, those three disciplines in particular. And agency, human agency, involves our capacity as human beings to engage in independent thought and action. So it is literally how we make sense of ourselves and our environments, make decisions, and then act on those decisions. So agency is our you might liken it to our personal power, our personal capacity to use all of our individual resources to kind of bring to bear on our lives and to act in ways that create a healthy, productive, meaningful life. So we, you know, because of the what we were working on, my co-author, Dr. Anthony Rao, we were trying to help people with this important aspect of their lives, because you know, we had been hearing so much in our practices that people were feeling stuck or trapped or at a loss as to figure out how to move forward in their lives. So we defined this as a problem with people's agency. So we, you know, knowing that this concept is not widely used or known by the general public, we convinced our publisher to use it on the title, because you know they were a bit reluctant. It's a great place to start. And again, back to what I said, you know, we like to say this is agency is the most important thing you've never heard of, because it does affect each and every one of us each and every day.
I Google searched the word, and it gave me a few things, personal agency, but not what I was looking for. Use the word agency in a sentence or two or three, or whatever you want to do, to give our listeners a better sense of how you're using this word, and put it down on an eighth grade level.
Absolutely. Well, you know, first of all, if you Google human agency, you'll probably come up with a lot more information. So I suggest to your listeners, if they'd like to look a little more deeply into this, you know, Google human agency, and you'll see there's a Wikipedia entry that goes into some detail. But so how to use agency in a sentence? You know, it's here's a shot. he expressed his agency through asking his boss for a raise. She demonstrated agency by thinking carefully about her options and making a decision that took her life in a positive direction. Those are a couple examples of the use of agency in a sentence. Another one might be through careful listening and reasoning, he accessed his personal agency to reflect on a situation and make a good decision for himself.
Okay.
So
my research showed Wikipedia, agency is the capacity of an actor to act in a given environment. Another one, your ability to take action, be effective, influence your own life, and assume responsibility for your behavior are important elements in what you bring to a relationship. This sense of agency is essential for you to feel in control of your life, to believe in your capacity to influence your own thoughts. Another one, personal agency refers to one's capacity to originate and direct actions for given purposes. And the last one, agency refers to the thoughts and actions taken by people that express their individual power. Okay, so if they buy your book, you're going to obviously get into more of who, what, where, why, and all these questions that go to the word agency.
Exactly. And those are great definitions, by the way. Those are all nice, concise, tight definitions. And the definitions you just read are consistent with how we define and use agency in our book.
Okay, so my background is in curing addiction. And one of the biggest symptoms in terms of the total number of people that has a symptom, psychological symptom, that also has the disease of addiction is anxiety. And your publicist wrote, there is a silent epidemic that's ravaging America, one that's lurking below the headlines, our near constant state of anxiety. According to the World Health Organization, the United States is the most anxious nation on earth, with at least one in five people, a full 40 million Americans, currently diagnosed with an anxiety disorder. You would agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. We start with that in our book and talk about the relevance that such shocking statistics have on people's level of personal agency.
Okay. Back when I was practicing family practice, a good 15% of the people that walked in the door came in with the diagnosis of anxiety and 10% depression. That's one in four of the people in a family practice. So I know from years ago that it was bad, but now it's getting worse. And I think that one of the reasons is if you turn on the news every day, you're going to see people dying and being burned up and getting shot every day. And if that isn't stress-producing, I don't know what is.
Well, there are many. You're exactly right. There are many sources of stress and anxiety, and we tend to use stress and anxiety in an interchangeable way. They're not exactly the same thing, but you know, stress over time, sustained stress over time, produces anxiety. So, of course, if you are exposed to a high quantity and high level of stress in your life, and without a break, without abating, over time you're apt to develop symptoms of anxiety. And we have data, my co-author Dr. Anthony Rao and I, on anxiety going back to the 1930s. We have data that looked at young adults in America, high school and college age young people, and show what's happened in terms of the rise in baseline levels of anxiety in America. And it's really shocking. And what a lot of people don't understand about anxiety is because we as human beings are social creatures, we're embedded in all of our relationships with other people and the communities we're a part of. When we're exposed to other people who are anxious, who have anxiety disorders, or who just are generally anxious people, we become more anxious ourselves. Anxiety, in other words, is socially contagious. So many people don't realize that that actually, because of how we're wired as human beings, that we actually pick up on anxiety and we respond to it by developing some anxiety ourselves. In some respects, that can save our lives, right? If we're in a dangerous situation and we're around somebody who is the first to hit the alarm, that can save our lives potentially. But at this point, because we are such an anxious country, we're literally spreading it from person to person, community to community, and that has significant effects, significant negative effects. And addiction, obviously being a chief among those negative effects, but there are others as well.
Okay, so you're talking about the concept of agency, and I talk about the concept of self-esteem. How does being a high-level agency person relate to a person who has a high level of self-esteem?
Well, that's a great question, and the two are not entirely the same, but they're certainly related. And I've not done a study correlating those two things to each other, but if I were to do a study, I would be shocked if I didn't see a strong correlation between self-esteem and high level of personal agency. Agency, when someone feels a high level or a healthy level of their own personal agency, by definition, they feel more confident. They feel more confident in their ability to make decisions, good decisions, and more confident about being able to take action on those decisions in their lives. So when someone feels more, more positive and more confident, they generally also have a higher level of self-esteem. They feel a sense of self-efficacy, to use a kind of a psych word. Self-efficacy refers to our sense of our ability to act on our environment. Back to that definition, one of the definitions you provided when on agency at the outset of our discussion. So when someone has a healthy sense of their own agency, and they have access to it, they know how to engage their agency, they're going to feel better about themselves. They're going to feel more positive and more confident, and their lives are generally going to work better. They're generally going to be healthier physically and emotionally.
Your book talks about what is agency, and I talk about what is self-esteem. And I'm wondering what in your book helps people develop a higher agency?
Another great question. You know, years back, I once heard someone say something that really stuck with me and that I think may be relevant here. And what that person said to me is, you know, if you want to increase your self-esteem, do esteemable acts. Take esteemable actions in your life. And agency is what allows you to do that. When you have a healthier level of personal agency, you're better able to engage your mind's capacity to reflect, to pause and reflect on both yourself and the situation that you find yourself in. And what we find missing so much in contemporary American society today is this time to reflect, to pause, to allow, to register, you know, what it is I'm feeling, what it is I'm thinking, what it is I'm noticing about the situation I'm in and how I'm feeling about it. And when we don't take the time, when we don't engage in this more reflective, you know, kind of thought as people, our level of agency goes down and the choices we make suffer. So there are a number of things we talk about in our book. We tried very hard to boil things down to the essentials. You know, what are some essential things that someone who wants to increase their level of personal agency, what is it that they should think about or do? And we came up with, you know, we had a long list of things that we thought about. We did a lot of field study, interviewed a lot of people, and we came up with a list. First, we started with a list of 9. We pared it down to a list of 7 things because we realized that the 2 of those things, you know, really kind of were similar to each other. So we have a list now of 7 we call them principles. They're things that we believe are really, you know, kind of unchanging. These are things that allow any human being to develop a higher level of personal agency in their lives. If they focus on these things, if they practice these principles more in their lives. We also developed a tool, a short little assessment instrument that helps people just to do a self-assessment to see where they are on these 7 principles. So it gives people a chance to see what they might be strongest at, what they also might need to develop more fully to build a higher level of agency in their lives. So, but the 7 principles, you know, we can talk about those and why they're relevant. But I think the one thing I wanted to share before we go much further is just, you know, what's happened in our environment, especially over the last, you know, 30 plus years, 30, 40 years, that's produced such a high level of anxiety. And anxiety, I don't know that I said this as clearly as I might have, anxiety gets in the way of us expressing our personal agency, of us having access to our full powers as people. Because when we're anxious, we tend to, it affects our decision making. We tend to pull inward. We tend to be our thoughts often are dominated by fears and worst case scenarios. And a lot of times we're just looking for relief. You know, we're looking for something that provides us with relief. So if we're living in an environment with increased anxiety, one of the questions is why? Why so much anxiety? What's causing all of this anxiety? And you know, that's a piece of the puzzle here. If we want to build higher levels, healthier levels of personal agency, we have to think about what's going on in our environment that's getting in our way, that's holding us back, that's an obstacle in our way. And so we talk about that a lot in the book, is what are some of the reasons why we see increased levels of anxiety, and also a decrease in people's level, perceived level of personal agency. And so we spent a lot of time in the introduction talking about that, and you know, chief among them is just the amount of stimulation we're exposed to. So you said a minute ago, you know, if you look at watch the news, or you know, you're exposed to images of people getting shot and all kinds of other highly, highly negative things. And that's certainly a piece of the puzzle here. But you know, what the stimuli that we expose ourselves to is very different than it was 30 years ago. We have, of course, with the rise of the internet, we are exposed to much, much more information, many more images. People are shocked when they see the statistics on how many different messages and images the average person is exposed to in the course of a regular day. So we're literally being assaulted by messaging and by data and images, and we need to learn to understand the effects that has on us and learn how to manage that so that, you know, we're not simply sitting ducks passively, you know, consuming this or exposing ourselves to this. So there's, you know, stimuli is a healthy thing. It can be. We need to expose ourselves to stimulation. It certainly isn't a bad thing. But overexposure to the wrong kind of stimuli weakens us. It interferes with, it raises anxiety, and it interferes with our sense of agency.
Okay, so we'll get to the seven principles in a minute, but before I lose my train of thought, what is the relationship between the anxiety that we've been talking about and the concept of mindfulness or mindfulness meditation?
If you'll recall, a minute ago I talked about this capacity to reflect, to pause and reflect, which is a very human thing. And, you know, it relates directly to anxiety, because when we take moments to give thought to you know, where what we're feeling, what we're thinking, why we might be feeling and thinking that, you know, we open up possibilities for ourselves to choose to do something positive, to take our lives in a positive direction. And so, you know, this idea of mindfulness really is a way to emphasize and build this reflective capacity. The whole idea is to quiet the mind, to get oneself into a more reflective state. You know, in this sort of organized way. I mean, mindfulness usually is a practice. It's actually something that you literally take a little time out and do. So we're very positive on mindfulness techniques. If, you know, some people, certain mindfulness practices are appealing to some people. There are a number of different mindfulness practices. You know, we also talk about in our book that, you know, that there are many things that one can do, simple little things that one can do in one's life that create greater mindfulness, that allow you to reflect more. Sometimes it's as simple as, you know, getting up and going out for a walk for 10 minutes and exposing yourself to nature and fresh air and being alone with your thoughts for a few moments. That's an example of mindfulness right there. So this mindfulness thing is, you know, it's no accident that, you know, with the increase in anxiety, we're seeing this sort of mindfulness movement, and it's a positive thing. It's a healthy thing. It's a way for people to take charge of themselves through, you know, these practices of mindfulness. again, they increase the level of, you know, the amount of reflection that one can do. And in one of the things that's happened over the last 30 to 40 years is, you know, with the amount of stimuli increasing exponentially, you know, that time for reflection, that space that we used to have to actually, you know, just have a little downtime to reflect, it's been eroded. It's diminished. And, you know, we have data on children and what children are doing in terms of just the type of play they engage in, the fact that children don't play outdoors very much anymore. There are all kinds of signs about what's changed in terms of how we are living, how we're behaving. And these things have a direct bearing on anxiety and how our level of personal agency as human beings.
Right. Absolutely right. Before we get on to your seven principles, I wanted to say that of the 30 different addictive behaviors that I see and try to help people with, the number one addiction in the country with respect to how many people are doing it is screen exposure. Exposures to their telephones, their computers, television, video games, and more people are addicted to that than any of the other things that they could be addicted to. And having said that, since there is such a high percentage of people that are addicted to screens, that means that whatever is on the screen is going to be very important in our discussion, because if what you see on your screens or the relationship that you have on your screens causes you distress, anxiety, depression, and everything, then it's going to be really something that you need to think about. How can I not be addicted to my screens? And I just threw that in as a side, but I think that that's a very relevant relationship problem to agency, to self-esteem, to other addictions, and I thought I'd mention that.
It's a very interesting point that of the 30 addictive behaviors you see, the number one is screen exposure, addiction to screen exposure. And you know, this is a new thing, right? This is, you know, the era of television came out, you know, really TV, you know, first started hitting its stride in the 1950s. And what's curious, you know, the 1950s is the decade we saw, you know, a pretty large spike in anxiety from the data we have. As I said before, we have data going back to the 1930s to all the present time. And the 1950s were a time, you know, where television and radio had been around for a while, but television became prominent. It was also an area where an era where the interstate highway system was opened up. Other new sort of communication channels began. The world started shrinking a bit in the 1950s, right? We air travel became easier and you know, more common. And interestingly, the poet, the American poet W.H. Auden, coined a term in the 1950s. He called it, and he was specifically referring to America, but he called it the age of anxiety. And now, looking back, if we look at the statistics on anxiety in the 1950s, we kind of laugh and we think, well, you know, because in relation to where we are today, it seems like child's play. And, you know, one sort of shocking, you know, statistic is that the average school-age child today carries around a baseline level of anxiety that is consistent with what a child inpatient psychiatric patient experienced in the 1950s. So if the 1950s were the age of anxiety, what we're calling the current age is the age of overwhelm. And what we see is overwhelm. We see people experiencing overwhelm, people from all walks of life, all educational levels, you know, all socioeconomic levels. You know, people may be surprised to hear, I work with business leaders, people may be surprised to hear how many accomplished, experienced business leaders experience overwhelm in their everyday lives. It cuts across all of us as Americans, this sense of overwhelm. And a lot of it does get back to what you just said, Wynn, about screen exposure. We, as Americans, one of our strengths is we embrace the new. We're all about what's new. And in some ways, that defines us. And in many ways, it's a very positive thing. However, this whole thing on screens and different media, particularly social media, these are very powerful influencers. And they're new. And they're designed to be very appealing, you know, very seductive, which is why people can develop an addiction to them, because they reinforce, you know, they offer certain rewards that reinforce people spending more and more time on them. But I think what we realize is people underestimate or are not aware of the effects of doing that. Watching television, you know, sitcoms and shows in the 1950s. Is so radically different from today. I mean, if you did a study and looked at television programs, for example, in the 1950s and 60s and compared them to today, everything is speeded up. Things are going five times faster, way more images, way more content just being directed your way. So this becomes, if we're not careful, we get overwhelmed simply by the stimuli that we allow our minds to be exposed to. So one of the places we start in the book is here and say, look, if you know what we allow to enter into our minds is one of the most important decisions we make in our lives. And many of us don't even realize that we're making those choices each and every minute of every day, because we simply assume that, you know, well, these screens exist and everybody else is doing it, so it must be okay, when in fact it's really not. So there is a healthy level of exposure to screens, and particularly, as you said, what are you watching? What are you exposing yourself to? So we like to say to people that we actually are currently living through one enormous social experiment in the United States. And we've put the tech industry in charge of that experiment. And we're just now starting to see the effects of it. And one of the effects is greater anxiety. And in many cases, addiction to screens.
I'm going to tell a story now about what happened yesterday to me. For the last 18 years, I've been running this radio and then internet talk show. And I had a Olympus recorder that was powered by software back 10 years ago. And all of a sudden, last week, Windows 10 decided they weren't going to support it anymore. So I didn't have any way of doing this interview with you. I didn't have any way of doing my show. And as you can imagine, it was pretty anxiety producing. Well, I went through everything, talking to people, following all kinds of leads and everything to fix the problem. And we're talking about hours yesterday. And as each hour got closer to our deadline for the show today, my anxiety level went up. And you know what I found out was that because of this anxiety, I started binging on sugar, eating sweets. Now, you know, normally I don't do that, but one thing leads to another. And fortunately, I got a workaround, and we're doing the show today. But I was really, really strung out on anxiety yesterday as each minute rolled around closer to deadline. And you could see how in my particular case, it went to eating sweets. But in another person's case, it might go to drinking alcohol or taking drugs or something else. It's all kind of interrelated, and you know, we could talk about that forever, but I just wanted to say that even though I've had a lot of experience with the problems associated with self-esteem, agency, if you will, and addiction and everything like that, I couldn't keep myself from going and eating cake and ice cream and and everything, you know? So,
well, it's a very human thing, and it's a very common thing. And I think what many people underestimate, you know, today is just how much stress and anxiety they really are exposed to. And then from there, what I'll also say is some of it is not avoidable. The issue that you experienced when was not avoidable. An event happened. Microsoft 10 decided no longer to support the software you had been using, and you were forced to adapt. You were forced to find a solution to keep your show going. So you know, there's, to a certain extent, you know, you simply had to marshal all of your capabilities to find a solution to adapt to this change. And you did. And part of what you noticed, you know, because you have developed a good reflective capacity is, wow, I really reached for a lot of sugar along the way. And because of my heightened level of anxiety in dealing with this stressful event, this unexpected stressful event that occurred. So what we see in our practices is that for many people, they're experiencing this same type, this similar type of stress and anxiety because of where we are today. Everyone is struggling to adapt. So your situation is a perfect example to look at, because you know, multiply that by millions of other people and millions of other situations. Everyone today is struggling to adapt to a rapidly changing world, and which requires us to make sense of what is actually occurring, and also figure out what we need to do differently, how we may need to think differently, in order to adapt. To effectively adapt to this change, this fast-changing world, and it's not stopping; it's continuing. If anything, it's only speeding up. You know, and a lot of this obviously has to do back to the digital stuff we've talked about. But I think you know the example you gave is a really, really good one. And how you handled it, you said, is one of the things you did was you called people, you consulted with a number of people who had some knowledge and expertise in this on the subject matter at hand, and you know, through taking some of that advice and giving thought to it on your own, you developed a solution, and that is a great way. It's another way of talking about agency because you through accessing other people's expertise. And you know, through a focus on solving the problem, you know, using your rational faculties, you were able to effectively adapt to this unexpected change. And so, you know, it's a rich example, and it is a demonstration of personal agency in action, a small one, but a good one.
All right. Well, I'm going to take a slight commercial break here, and I want to tell you that I just finished a little e-booklet on a subject that impacts every individual in the country one way or the other. And I want to give you the opportunity for a limited amount of time to get that e-booklet for free. And what it is, the title is, Look What Drug the Cat In. And the drug we're talking about is alcohol. The society has gone bonkers in trying to get everybody to buy more and more alcohol. And the subtitle is 25 Good Reasons Why You Don't Want to Drink Alcohol. So if you have a question about making yourself abstinent or continuing to drink, or a family member or somebody that you care about, this is information that's vitally important. And so if you'll go over to my website, which is RevWynHendersonMD.com, for at least a limited time, I'm going to give you a link where you can see this book and make a decision for yourself whether or not you want to be a drinker of alcohol or not. Now, let me ask you about your book. How do they get a copy of it?
Yeah, the book is available pretty much everywhere at bookstores, Amazon. Many people like the convenience of ordering online, so it is available through online booksellers. The website where people can find more information about agency and take one of the subtests in our assessment tool is called powerofagency.com. I think there's also a link there to buy the book as well. But you can just, people can go there and just you get a deeper look at what agency means and see my bio and my co-author's bio as well.
Well, this is a content-rich interview program, and you have seven concepts in your book which they need to buy in order to get a full description of them and how they can be helpful in what we're talking about. But could you, before we quit, list those seven things, and if you want to make a short statement about the importance, go ahead.
Absolutely. Be really happy to. The first one we've already talked about a bit so far, which is the first principle to increase agency is we call control stimuli. And this is the ability to cut back on the number of distractions in your immediate environment to increase your capacity to make effective choices. Deciding where your attention goes and will bolster your creative thinking and increase your decision making capability. The second principle of agency we call associate selectively. This one is one of the more important of the seven. It's about surrounding yourself with healthy, open-minded, and supportive people. Because when we do that, it elevates our mood, it improves our overall health and well-being, and it increases our level of agency. The third principle we call move. And move is really, it is about physical movement, but it also is about taking care of your physical body, which means giving thought to how much exercise you're getting, are you eating a healthy diet, sleeping enough each day, are you actually paying attention to the physical needs of your body. the fourth, position yourself as a learner. And this is what you did when yesterday, when you learned that the software that you had was no longer compatible or supported by Microsoft. Position yourself as a learner is actively questioning, listening, and learning as part of your daily routine to give you a deeper understanding of the world around you and to build on your knowledge and capabilities. The fifth principle we call, and this may be one of the toughest ones for us, as all of us as humans, is we call manage your emotions and beliefs. And this one, because we're emotional creatures primarily, we're more emotional creatures than thinking creatures, this idea of how do we manage our emotions and our beliefs, because these things have a great impact on our level of agency, our capacity to make good decisions for ourselves, to see ourselves and the world around us, you know, clearly. So managing emotions and beliefs is one of the one of the more important principles, and also probably one of the most difficult ones. So we have it's a pretty long chapter actually on this. The sixth principle we call check your intuition, and this is about developing your intuitive capability, because it turns out that when we make decisions as humans, we primarily, most of the decisions we make is through, we make through intuition. And this has, is good and not so good. There's reasons why this is both positive and not so positive. So we go into great depth on how to develop greater intuition and when to use it and when not to use it. The final principle we call deliberate, then act. And this is the principle that zeroes in more on our capacity to engage in critical thinking, to use our logical reasoning skills and to develop our logical reasoning skills more so we can be more clear-headed and make decisions based on real data, so that, you know, combined with our intuitive capabilities, when we combine this with our intuitive capabilities, our logic and reasoning and intuition really help us to make much, much better decisions in our lives. So this last principle is kind of where we bring it all together, and this whole idea of deliberate, which means give, you know, as juries do, you know, give thought, reflect, consider things from all angles, use your logic and reasoning to help you make the most effective decisions in your life. So those are the seven principles that we distilled down from, you know, a long list of different things that actually build agency. This was our attempt to break it down into the simplest possible terms so that people could fully access and utilize this information to help them build a healthier level of agency in their lives.
So if you want to learn more about the seven principles, you got to get the book, because we don't have time today to go into them at a deeper level, but it's something that will really help you in your life. I think that it will help you with your anxiety. I think it will help you with the things that you are addicted to. And it's just going to be a good learning experience for you. So go get that book, The Power of Agency. And Paul, thanks so much for being on the program today and talking with us about this problem that's really a big problem in the world, and what your take is on some of the things that you can do about it.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure to be here. And one last final thought is many people have been telling us that they're enjoying listening to the Audible version of the book. The Audible, we had a have a gentleman who's reading the book over Audible and has a very calming voice, and many people have commented to us that they've enjoyed listening to the book as opposed to reading it. So that's another option that's available to your listeners. But thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate all the great questioning, and really appreciate the work that you do when on addiction and all these other important topics that really help people to have successful, healthy lives.
Well, thank you, Paul, and keep up the good work.
Thanks. You do the same, Wynn.